Hello, this is Tom, and I just wanted to make you aware that this episode discusses child loss, fentanyl poisoning, and accidental overdose. So please listen with caution if you feel you may be activated by any of that content. Few things are for sure in this life, but this is. If we live for any substantial amount of time, we will encounter grief due to the loss of a loved one. Not something any of us ever want, and we all handle it differently. This podcast is to feature those who have done purposeful and meaningful things through their grief. These people featured on here are normal folks, just like you and me, who were thrust into a place they never wanted to be in their lives. A painful place. As they move through their pain, they realize that something worthwhile, something for the greater good, could come out of the unthinkable. I'm sure that none of them would ever consider themselves to be a hero, but when I searched the definition of the word hero, I found this. A person who is admired or idolized for courage, outstanding achievements, or noble qualities. And that fit. And so, it's my privilege to bring you the remarkable stories of these heroes in grief. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Heroes in Grief podcast. This, although it probably doesn't matter down the line, but this is the very first release of the podcast right here. So welcome. I have an exciting guest on right away, and we're going to tell you all about that because it means a lot to me. And it means a lot to Chris Ryan, who I have with me. We're going to tell you about the organization that he is involved with and that I'm involved with, too, because of being a member. And we're going to tell some great stories here. So Chris is going to tell us about a new book that's about to be released. It'll be released tomorrow. This podcast is airing on Monday, the April 29th, and it's released on April 30th. And he'll feed you all that information as well. We will go from there. So without further ado, I want to introduce to you Chris Ryan. And Chris, if you just first maybe give us a little background about yourself, and we'll lead into things from there.
Well, sure. Thank you. And it's an honor to be here for your first show. I'm very, very happy to join you today, Tom. Yeah, I live in San Diego. I grew up in San Diego, married my wife, met her in Tucson, and have been married once, which I think can be kind of a rare thing these days. But yeah, my wife, Sin, and I, we met in Tucson, moved back here to San Diego, have moved around a little bit, spent some time in Cincinnati for work. My background is in marketing and advertising and broadcasting. Right now, I'm a videographer, been doing that for many, many years, mixed in with the advertising career. We started a family late. We didn't have our son Sean until we were about 39. We had tried getting pregnant for quite a while and had some trouble. And as soon as we gave up and started looking at adoption or maybe not having kids, that's when we got pregnant. Yeah, Sean was born in 1997. And he is featured on the cover of the book. He's our pride and joy. Love that kid. Very stubborn, strong-willed kid. But we just had so much fun with him growing up and doing sports and all that. I don't know if you want me to tell the entire story now in terms of, you know, what ultimately led me to being in Helping Fathers Heal. But suffice it to say, Sean transitioned about 2.5 years ago due to fentanyl poisoning. Before that, he had had his run-ins with addiction and just trying to self-medicate. He loved feeling different. He loved feeling relaxed. He was kind of had some anxiety, some low self-esteem issues. It's interesting how kids bring certain things into the world with them, personality-wise, or just some defaults that are set in their soul. And so as parents, we work with that and tried to support him as best we could. But ultimately, he passed at the age of 23. He was just 2 weeks shy of his 24th birthday.
Hmm. Yeah, as I was reading your story in the book, actually, Jeff, my son, passed from fentanyl poisoning as well. I saw a lot of parallels and felt them as I was reading your story with Sean. Yeah, it's tough as a parent. A lot of people can always, you know, be an armchair quarterback with all that stuff. And it's very, very difficult. I was estranged from Jeff for 5 years before he came to us to straighten himself out and get out of those things. You know, people can say a lot of things about how it was handled or whatever, but, you know, it's pure hell going through it. And there's just no doubt about that. And sometimes you just don't know what to do. So, yeah, you said Sean was started getting involved in those things, and as he was into music and that. So that kind of fed that a little bit, I guess, from your story. But why don't you go on with the things surrounding that?
Yeah, well, Sean, both of us love music. I was a radio DJ for like 20 years, so the microphone is no big deal for me. And so I was on the radio. This was before Sean was born, though. And then I kind of transitioned into marketing and advertising after he was born. But I grew up with a love for music. That's what got me into radio, is just because, you know, it was a fun job and I could do it. I thought, well, I'm going to do this until they figure out that I'm not good enough to keep doing it. And I kept that frame of reference for like, I don't know, the first 5, 6, 7 years. And then it started to feel like, hey, this is a real job. This is a career. So, yeah, my love for music, you know, we had music on in the house, music in the car. Introduced Sean to music when I could. Some of it wasn't cool for him, but you know, it's funny, depending on the age of your kids, like Sean never listened to the radio. He grew up with YouTube and everything was podcast downloads, file sharing with friends, doing a lot of research online about different bands. So he would definitely get deep into the music that he liked. And a lot of his music I liked too, this kind of alternative indie music. And so I took him to a lot of shows. We experienced those together, and it was really fun, even though I was kind of like the chaperone in the room. I was the old guy in the room sometimes. Those were good bonding times for Sean and I. We have had some really good memories sharing music together and exploring and, you know, turning each other on to different bands and whatnot. He never could get into Frank Zappa until like about 21 years old, and I kept telling him, hey, you got to check this guy out, and I interviewed him when I was on the radio, which was really pretty rare because Frank was notorious for hating radio stations, but our station happened to play his music. So anyway, we had some good times sharing music, but that's where he kind of went into, researching what these musicians that passed away earlier, they're taking drugs or they're, you know, drugs was a part of the mix with music, especially bands in the 60s and 70s and even the 80s and 90s. And so he was curious about that. And he would go to shows and he would kind of look around and watch the kids and notice that there were some that were in altered states, but he was still too young to really know better. But he was curious about it. And then when he got to junior high, that's when he started experimenting because he was around a bigger group of kids, new kids. Sometimes he would make the wrong choices and fall in with the kids that were kind of edgy and experimenting. So he didn't, by default, go to be the good kid that did what his parents said. He wanted to do what he wanted to do. He was driven by some other energy force and was really attracted to finding out what is marijuana? You know, that seems very harmless, and it's even legal in some states for medicinal purposes. So that's where it started. And then he, you know, drank some beers with some friends and got relaxed. And one thing led to another, and he just kept experimenting with things. But ultimately, he really loved Xanax. You know, he just loved just being mellow. He didn't go for the speedy things. He went for things that just kind of took the edge off. And again, I think a lot of it was anxiety and some of that inside conflict that was going on with him. I just wanted to reach there and fix it, you know.
Right.
And being a dad, you want to dial up that combination lock and figure out, how do I unlock this thing? How do I help him? How, You know, we did therapy. Gosh, we did interventions. We sent him to rehab. He did sober living. But bottom line is he just didn't want to be sober. He didn't have a real deep desire. He never got to that point where he was desperate to be sober. He had short, brief periods after he would have an episode where he just got really sick. But it didn't last very long. He just liked altering his mental state.
Yeah, very, very complex and difficult. And as anybody knows who's in the throes of that or loving somebody who is. And so what ultimately it took his life. You want to elaborate on that story and then what that led into for you?
Well, he was 21 and we're living in San Diego. He was living where he grew up, which was Cincinnati, because that's where his formative years were, and I was working in advertising there. We all planned to move to San Diego after he graduated high school, but he did not make the grades. He was really faltering. And in fact, between his junior and senior years of high school, he was 17, so we were able to make the decision to send him somewhere because he was under 18. He was still a minor. And we did the most extreme thing that we could think of, which was to send him to Utah for a wilderness therapy camping experience. You know, they take in these kids from all over the country. And it is kind of an industry. I mean, I'm sure it's helped some kids. I know that there's, you know, going to be success stories. But for Sean, you know, he was exposed to a lot of kids who were older than him and were also like dealing in heroin and doing really hardcore stuff. So he was kind of maybe even not bullied, but, you know, they played around with him a little bit because he was the kid that was just smoking pot and drinking. You know, he wasn't really into much of the hardcore stuff at that point. But for us, we saw his attitude go down, his grades going down, his discipline, his motivation, his ambition. He was just going in the wrong direction, we felt. And we were starting to not really recognize him as our son. This isn't the kid that we remember. He just doesn't seem to want to try to get through school or to get good grades. And he was very protective of his privacy. He didn't want us looking at his computer. He didn't like any of that parental oversight stuff that a lot of, you know, families have just because the kids are okay. They go along with it. But Sean was not having it. So we sent him to Utah for 6 weeks, and it was a good program. Therapeutics, they had social workers. They reported back to us every week. He wrote us every week. We communicated just through letters. But then he came home. We did not send him to boarding school. That was what they recommended. That's kind of sort of the pipeline for that industry. It seems like a lot of the kids get into a therapeutic boarding school and they end up never coming home, or they come home after they've gotten really, you know, matured a bit more. But we brought Sean home. He did his senior year, didn't graduate. We moved to California as planned because we'd already sold our house. But he asked if he could stay behind and take school another year. And so he was 18, and I moved out when I was 18. We thought, okay, we're going to give him a chance to figure stuff out. He had a car and he had a job. We got him set up in a room, you know, with some roommates. That's the way a lot of us kids grew up, right? After high school. So, but he didn't graduate that year either. He totaled his car 3 days before finals, and he would have squeaked by if he'd made it to finals. But as it turned out, he couldn't get to school because his car was totaled and he just was not in any physical, mental condition to take. I mean, he wasn't injured, but he was not ready to take the tests. So he stayed in Cincinnati, and things just kept unraveling for him to the point where we brought him out to San Diego when he was around 20, and he stayed with us for a couple of years. That's where we did the rehab and everything. But it just didn't work, and life was getting too crazy in the house. We were living with an active addict who, you know, he was just taking whatever. I remember one, he'd taken so many benzodiazepines, which is basically Benadryl, and he was taking those to try to sleep, but he was taking too many, and you get hallucinations with that. And he came in the middle of the night once saying that there were ants in his bed. We thought it was serious. You know, we went in there, took a look, but he was hallucinating. So things were just getting too crazy, you know, spending the night in jail. Some really bad memories of him just being in dangerous situations where he could have really gotten himself hurt, and he wouldn't take any advice. So we had to ask him, you know, this is just too crazy for us. You need to find other accommodations. So he decided to move back to Cincinnati, and he got a job there. He was paying his rent, but he was still kind of hanging with the wrong crowd. And he bought online. He thought he was getting ketamine. He'd done his research, and he knew that that was a drug that was being used in treatment for depression. You buy stuff online, you don't know what you're getting. And so he ended up on the front porch of his house. His roommate found him, and he wasn't breathing. So they called 911, and they were able to resuscitate him. They took him to the emergency room, then the ICU, but he could not regain consciousness. And after about 2 days, his body started shutting down, and we had to make the decision not to continue life support at that point, because it just was no brain activity at all. It was going the wrong direction. So that was the hardest decision. That the Utah decision was hard, and then obviously discontinuing life support was the ultimate.
So very sorry, Chris. We're in a club that we don't want to be in, that's for sure. You know, people, I just want to say this at this point, there's going to be these stories as we go through Heroes in Grief. I think it's important, you know, without too much graphic, you know, entities, of course, that the stories are told, because, you know, a lot of people think they're out there alone. You know, I've listened to a lot of different stories that maybe not are exactly like mine and Jeff's, but I always tend to glean something out of them, something you can identify with. But most of all, just to realize that you're not alone. You're not alone in your grief. A big part of why I want to do this podcast is to help people along in their grief. And so sharing these stories and sharing with each other, we realize that although we grieve individually and in our own ways, that there's a common thread through all of it as well. And the pain that we all feel, that is the reason why we tell these stories. And so, you know, I just want to let people know that, encourage that. There's a definite positive side to this podcast that we're going to get to as well. You know, I just want people to feel that and understand that, and not get too overwhelmed by it as well. You had to make that terrible decision, and then life changes. So I'll let you take it from here. I know some of the things that went on and where things were headed, but it's your story, and I want you to tell it the way that you want to tell it. So why don't we proceed from there?
Well, after this happened, I can't speak for anybody else, but I have talked to a lot of other dads in our group, our support group, Helping Fathers Heal. And it seems very common that you just wake up. I mean, you feel like you're going to wake up from a nightmare. You feel like what you're living is so foreign and surreal that you don't really recognize yourself. You don't recognize your emotions. Everything just has a weird color to it. The world isn't colorful anymore. And that first wave of shock and grief washes over you, and everything you can do just to make breakfast or to get out of bed. And at the time, I was extremely busy with work. I had a lot of commitments, so I had to follow through on those. And there was a certain therapeutic quality to that, being able to kind of put my mind into a different mode and just work on autopilot, creating videos for people and doing what I needed to do. But then, gosh, you get home at night and you look at your wife and it's like, God, what do we do? You can't watch TV. I mean, there is no entertainment. All we could do is do some research on how this works for other parents, how people heal. How do people repair their lives after something like that? My wife, Cyn, short for Cynthia, Cindy, Sen did a lot of research on healing and support groups, and she learned about different groups like Compassionate Friends, Helping Parents Heal. We got some books. We read books about the afterlife and what happens, because there's a lot of research out there now on what happens to that energy, that spirit. And it's my belief that we don't die, that there's a part of us, you know, the body dies. But, you know, I grew up Baptist, but this is not one of those kind of go to heaven or hell types of stories. I don't necessarily have that same belief system anymore, but I do believe that our loved ones are still with us, that they are still just on a different dimension, a different plane. We found that there was a conference coming up for Helping Parents Heal. This was in August of 2022. Sean had passed September 4th of 2021, so we were still, you know, less than a year out. But we went to this conference. I went with my wife, technically. I agreed to go with her, but I wasn't really that familiar with the support groups yet. And we went there with about 800 other people, and it was just amazing. The energy, the positivity, the camaraderie in the room. We heard from specialists who could be mediums who are working with communicating with spirit, or people who are doing, you know, hardcore university-based research on what happens to your spirit after you die. We really found some friends there, literally, people that are still friends to this day. And I found Helping Fathers Heal at that group, because that's an affiliate of Helping Parents Heal. There's a group that is just for the dads, because I probably 90% of the people that frequent the support groups in Helping Parents Heal, it's mostly women, which is great. And they're getting a lot out of it. My wife has gotten a lot out of it. But I think, guys, it's harder. It's harder for us to reach out and say, hey, I need help. You know, I feel lonely, or I don't feel strong right now, or I just don't want to spend any time thinking about it. We compartmentalize it. And it's like, okay, I don't want to go there. I don't want to live in that pain anymore. And so, you know, not every guy is able to reach out and like what we're doing right now, Tom, is just telling our story and being totally vulnerable. But it isn't second nature for everybody. But there is healing. I've found that there is healing in that community, you know, the compassion that you get when you're with people who understand.
Yes. As I alluded to earlier, I am part of the Helping Fathers Heal group now, and I was so happy when I found it, because I did experience that a little bit in other online groups where it's dominated by women, really. And like you said, it's not a problem. It's just, I was like, wow, where's all the men? You know, I didn't feel strange because I wanted to share or whatever, but it just struck me. Mm-hmm. And just so everybody knows, you know, state it right out there that Helping Parents Heal and Helping Fathers Heal, we've all lost children. So the organization was formed for parents who lost children. So, you know, we're all in the same boat that way. You're united with a lot of people who understand on a level that they can understand, quite simply put. And that's, you know, the men's meeting are pretty powerful, because the greatest part of it is it's just men being men. You know, we can be ourselves there amongst each other and share the way that we need to share. And that sometimes it's very brutal and very open and not clean. But so just so people are aware of that. But it's needed. It's so needed, because the raw emotion that is part of all this, you know, sometimes we just really need to let it out. That's where all that goes. I just wanted to clarify that for everybody so they knew, because it's just men being men there, and we talk like men and we share like men, and we get to the real reality of all of this amongst each other. And that's very needed for a lot of us, you know, just to get that out. Because as time goes on, when you have a tragedy, or, you know, you lose someone you love, you know that people are around in the beginning and everything, but then it tails off, and eventually you realize who your grief friends are and who your other friends are, kind of. Yeah. So it's nice to have that in the men's meetings.
That's right.
Out of that spurred some great things when you got involved with Helping Parents Heal. And, you know, I don't know how far you want to jump ahead in all of it, but let's go on from there.
Well, I think some of the most exciting things that I've had happen, and it's hard, I mean, it is exciting when you feel like you can connect to your child. And that's one thing that a lot of us in the group do have in common. We do have an open mind when it comes to connecting with spirit. I've had two experiences personally where I've felt Sean's presence, but not in a dream state. I felt that there was a three-dimensional experience of him where it was not a vision, but it's just something else. I do think that we can attune ourselves to that spirit. And there are many books out there that talk about that. You know, the frequency, it's like dialing in a radio, you know, there's a frequency for the afterlife. And that's part of what we try to do in meditation is raise our frequency or raise our vibration or try to find a way to kind of push through the veil, the curtain that may separate us from our loved ones who have passed away. I don't think they're that far away. I think they're right here. It's just that we're not on the same dimension. So at the conference, I had an experience with a medium where she was able to make some amazing connections with my son. And Sean came through and told us a few things that no one would have known, including how I had just torn down a deck in the backyard and I put a board on it and I messed up the finish. And, you know, nobody would know this. I don't put this on YouTube or anything. I'm not proud of it. But my son was teasing me that the board, the finish doesn't even match, Dad. And then she was talking about music and how I was trying to play guitar. And Sean said, yeah, but you couldn't ever get the bar chords, Dad, which is exactly true. You know, these are things I don't tell people. My wife knows. But anyway, that was a fantastic thing. It gave me a sense of hope. And then meeting with the dads also gives me a sense of hope. Just feeling that connection and the sense of community is healing for me. And it gives, you know, the love, the hole in our heart that our children leave. I feel like the only thing that can fill that just even remotely is the love that we can share amongst each other. And unless you're in the middle of the grief process, it's really hard to know exactly how that feels. And so that's why being with other men and other people, male or female, who've been through this and who know and understand, that's part of the healing process for me.
Mm. I share your belief, as you stated very eloquently. That is where I stand now in my belief about the afterlife and everything as well. And so what a great quote that was about the love. And that is awesome. So the conference, what, you know, you've made some connections there then and connected with some of the men. The men's group was already going by then, right? The online group, the Zoom sessions.
Yeah. It was started back maybe a year before. I think it was started in 2021. It was started by Mike Edwards, and he was the affiliate leader. That's how it works with Helping Parents Heal. They have affiliates in different cities, in different geographic locations. And during COVID, of course, everything went virtual, went online and to Zoom. But with the men, you know, we're not bound by geography. We can meet whenever and just, you know, get online. And so there became a need for more affiliate leaders because we like to rotate. Sometimes we're busy. We can't make every meeting. So now there are, I think, 6 total affiliate leaders. And every 6th week I lead, and I love it. You know, it's just you keep the ball rolling. You make a safe place for people and a place for them to be heard and for them to talk about their child and say their name and celebrate their life, but also share the pain that you're going through, whatever that might be. And every week there's a dad that's coming up on an anniversary, you know, either the birth date or the angelversary. Last night we had a man that was the day. It was 3 years to the day. So it's good to be there for that man and to stand with him and empathize and let him know that he's not alone, that he's being held up and embraced by brothers.
Yeah. And just so, as with anything else, we will have the information available to you on the podcast information there, the show notes and things. So all the links to everything will be there. And, you know, many women will be listening, of course. And if you can encourage your man to possibly join us and be part of things there, it's powerful. You know, this is not a setup here or anything. This is the first time me really talking to Chris at all. So we talked on the phone briefly, but so we're getting acquainted here as well, although we've been in the meetings together. But so just so you know, this is the way it kind of works, that it's very comfortable. It's men with men. If you can encourage your man to be struggling, needing some help around him, then we're there for sure. So that is great. You guys got together and you decided to get a little collaboration going. And that's what you mentioned before with the book. What was the backstory with that and what's developed out of that?
Well, I had one of my first medium readings. This would have been a couple of years ago. Can't say exactly when, but she said, and she was connecting with Sean, she said, there's a book inside of you. Are you working on a book? And I was like, no, I don't know anything about it. I'm not a writer. I don't have any aspirations to become a writer. I don't know what I would write about. And so that, you know, that was it. But the seed was planted. It came up again in a second medium reading. And at this point, I had started thinking about, well, these dads, every week, they have a story. You know, it's really helpful to hear people's stories. And I think in our culture, and I think in all cultures, you know, throughout time and space on our planet, people have left an oral history. That's how they've helped create a culture, a civilization of what our family does, who we are, what we're about, what we've experienced. Unfortunately, in Western culture, I don't think we honor that oral tradition as much as some of the more indigenous cultures. But capturing a story and telling the story is a way for me to help immortalize my son, Sean, and also to help other people understand that, okay, what happened to me is not an isolated event. It helps me knowing, too, that you, Tom, have experienced the same type of pain with, you know, your son dying of fentanyl. There's so many different stories out there, and all those kids, in the third time, as Isabella Johnson, who's a very well-known medium, and she's recommended by HPH, Helping Parents Heal, which means she's been vetted. I think it's a double or a triple blind test that they conduct for these mediums to make sure that there's no quacks or you know, fakes in there. Isabella said, and this was just about 3 months ago, the book was being edited at this point, she said, the children are excited, their stories are going to be told. And I didn't tell her anything about this. And then she went so far as to say, it seems to be mostly boys. I see maybe about 7 girls, but most of the kids' stories, they're mostly boys. And I'd never counted, but of the 25 chapters, I went back and I looked at it, and sure enough, 7 of the chapters, dads were talking about their daughters. So, yeah, I think it's just a matter of sharing. I've enjoyed reading books where I've learned from other people what they experienced, how did they get over it, how did they get from one day to the next, or, you know, what was the first year like compared to the second year? People that have dealt with friends that have abandoned them or family members that don't call anymore. All of those things, you feel so isolated when you're in the middle of it. You think you're the only one. But reading stories and hearing from others that they also have encountered those heartbreaking experiences, and how we've gotten through it. How have we helped each other? How have we learned to somehow make a new life for ourselves? So that's why I thought the book would be helpful. And I mentioned it in one of the men's groups on a Wednesday night, and I got maybe 8 or 9 guys that raised their hands and put their name and phone number in the chat. And so I mentioned it again the next week and the next week. And before you know it, we had 25 men, self-included, that were all willing to write a story. And they're not writers. You know, these guys, they're not novelists, but they just wanted to share the story of their child and to immortalize that story. And so that's where the idea came from. And just super happy to have the book out there because there are not that many books for dads that are dealing with the loss of a child. There are a lot of books out there that are just on grief in general, but not that many that are really tailored to the unique kind of cultural nuances of the guy that has to go back to work. How does the man lead his family and still, you know, put bread on the table and be the emotional support system? And how do you manage the other children? There are just a lot of complexities that are different, male to female.
Amazing. And the book is well written. You say that these guys are not writers and things, but it's very well written. It's almost like all separate books, really. And, yeah. As I went in, because they all have their own style. Right. And so it's really neat as you enter into each one. It's like it's a new story, and it's pretty wonderful that way. Short enough for little snippets and things. So
yeah, we tried it's to great. Keep the voice, you know, the dad's voice. We did edit it, but we wanted to make sure that each dad's personality was preserved and that child's personality was preserved. So it is. It is like a vignettes. You know, short. 25 little mini books within one book. So yeah, I'm proud of the dads. They really stepped up.
Yeah, you captured that very, very well. No doubt about that. So the book will be out tomorrow, right? That's April 30th. And where is it going to be released?
It's an Amazon book, and it's also on Kindle as an ebook. So it's only $4.44 for the ebook if you want to download it on your Kindle or if you have the app. So yeah, paperback, and the pictures are all color, which is good because it makes a huge difference. It's available now on Amazon, not in any physical stores at this point. It's all online.
And the title?
Helping Fathers Heal: Grief, Hope, and Our Search for Connection. It really is search for connection both with our children, but our search for connection with each other. And that's where the hope comes in, and when the healing comes in, is connecting with each other and connecting with our children and connecting like this. I mean, this is healing for me right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, you did touch on this a little bit, and I'm going to read a quote that you put at the end of your story. This is very powerful. It says, "Love is the answer. In the end, that's all there is, pure love. You don't have to go through this alone, and you will get through it." Yeah. That is so powerful and meaningful. You know, that's something that you learn as you go forward, and you know, as we are searching the afterlife and things, and the things you learn about, we kind of believe in, and that's that. There's a purpose for us here still, because as you said, when I found Jeff when he passed. And the first thing I was screaming, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? That's what I was screaming. Because you're uprooted. The volcano top is blown off. Mm-hmm. And you are just lost. And yeah. It's like, what am I going to do? And you said the same thing, like, you know, going in after, like, okay, what am I now? What is this? You know, whole different world. And so as you go on and you learn and you heal a little bit, you never get over it, but you know, you start learning that it's not to be taken out of this life, because it's easy for a lot of people to say, well, if you believe that, then you're going to go on and everything, and you're going to be with them, you're reunited with them, then why don't you just go? And it's because we have a purpose here, and our purpose is to love, first of all, and to love one another and take care of one another. You know, that's what all of this is about, really. It all comes out, it fleshes out in different ways, and yours has come out in this book and being part of the things you're part of and everything. And each of us needs to find that. We're all at a different place in all of it, and no one should be frustrated by, if they're not where someone else might be, because your journey is yours. And it's very freeing to feel that and to know that and to say, it's okay, I can be where I'm at and you can be where you're at, and we're just here to lead each other along. That definitely takes place in the group, you know, those type of things. And the book accomplishes that wholeheartedly.
Well, something you said there, I have to absolutely emphasize, is the part of the healing process for a lot of the dads is finding something that gives purpose and meaning to their life, and to try to do something in honor of their child is super healing. And the book for me is that, but other dads do foundations. They try to provide scholarships. They do blood drives. You know, if they had a child who happened to have cancer and they experienced the frustration of not being able to get a procedure done because there wasn't enough blood that day. So yeah, you'll find that a lot of the stories in the book contain examples of fathers. And that's what I love too about the fathers group is we take action. That's part of how we're wired. And so taking action in the name of our loved one is a part of that healing journey. And it really, it's good to see so many dads doing good things in the world on behalf of that child.
Yeah, and accepting that too, right? Because we're fixers and we can't fix this, but we can do a lot more with it, that's for sure. And it's being open to receive that and say, hey, I can play a different role here. And, you know, I can let things take me and mold me and shape me. Like you said, the book was brought to you. It blossomed in there, you know, it came about and blossomed. So be open to receiving things too. You know, not everybody's ready for that, of course, but be open to it because there's something out there for you. One of the greatest things too, and you show it, Chris, is your heart and the heart of the men. Last night's session was like that. We had some hurting guys in there, and boy, you just looked around at the faces, and you know everybody felt it and was there for each other. We witness each other's grief, and that's important. So thank you for that, and your heart is evident, and appreciate it very much. Chris, thanks. I hope, you know, like I said, we'll put all the links to everything, things you want to get in touch with, helping fathers heal, helping parents heal. Anything else you might have a question with, feel free to contact me. And, you know, Chris will provide whatever he wants to provide for this too. But thank you so much for sharing and being a part of this. Thank you for making yourself available because not everybody will. You know, all you guys who opened up your hearts to do this. And it's going to be a powerful, powerful tool for sure. And I was thinking about already buying a bulk amount and giving them out to people and that type of thing. Yeah, you want that, right?
I don't make any money on it. It's not. It's just get that book out there. That's the thing. All the money goes to the nonprofit organization helping parents heal. But yeah, I hope it does get out there and provides that kind of healing for guys, their wives, you know, for their spouses to understand what it's like in this
world. That's an important point because, you know, women, I know I close down a lot and Judy tells me, you know, that we're trying to communicate better because you just don't know what to do sometimes or what to say or how to say it or how to share. It just happens. And I'm a boisterous guy. I talk. I love talking to people, but I know I do it. And so this is a good insight thing to people, almost like the Venus and Mars thing, right? Where they can look inside these men's minds a little bit and see how they're thinking, what they're thinking about, what they're going through. And that's powerful too. So great.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, thank you so much. And, you know, hey, maybe we'll be having you on again. Who knows, down the line, who knows what's going to transpire. So thanks so much for being here and your stories. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Good luck with your podcast. Sorry for the technical difficulties, but I appreciate you inviting me for this first show. It really means a lot.
No problem. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Heroes in Grief podcast. If you'd like access to any of the links that we discussed in today's show, you can find them in the show notes. There's also a link there to support the podcast if you care to. And there is an email link for me there. I'd love to hear from you and your ideas about the show or what you thought about the show. Each week, Heroes in Grief is released on Monday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. So look for new episodes there. Thank you again for listening to Heroes in Grief.